Chapter 19. Aboard the steamer Fever Dream, Mississippi River, August 1857. The sharp, insistent rapping on his cabin door finally summoned Abner Marsh back from his deep, dreamless sleep. He stirred groggily and sat up in bed. "A minute!" he shouted. He lumbered over to his basin like a big naked bear just out of hibernation, and none too happy about it. It wasn't until Marsh had splashed some water on his face that he remembered. "God damn it all to hell!" he swore angrily, staring at the grey shadows gathering in every corner of the small, dim cabin. Beyond the window, the sky was dark and purple. "God damn!" he repeated, pulling on a pair of clean trousers. He stomped over and yanked open the door. "What the hell is the meaning of letting me sleep so long?" Marsh shouted at Jonathan Jeffers. "I told Harry Mike to wake me a whole goddamn hour before sunset, dammit." "It is an hour before sunset," Jeffers said. "It clouded up. That's why it looks so dark. Mr. Albright says we're going to get another thunderstorm." The clerk stepped into Marsh's cabin and shut the door behind him. "I brought you this," he said, handing over a hickory walking stick. "I found it in the main cabin, Cap'n." Marsh took the stick, mollified. "I lost it last night," he said. "Had other things on my mind." He leaned the stick up against the wall and glanced out the window again, frowning. Beyond the river, the whole western horizon was a mass of threatening clouds moving their way, like a vast wall of darkness about to collapse on them. The setting sun was nowhere to be seen. He didn't like it one bit. "I better get up to Joshua," he said, pulling out his shirt and commencing the business of getting dressed. Jeffers leaned on his sword cane. "Shall I accompany you?" he asked.
"I ought to talk to Joshua by myself," Marsh said, tying his tie with an eye on the mirror. "I don't relish it, though. Why don't you come on up and wait outside? Maybe Joshua will want to call you in and talk about what we're going to do."
Left unspoken was the other reason that Marsh wanted the clerk close at hand. Maybe he'd want to call him in if Joshua York didn't take kindly to the news of Damon Julian's demise.
"Fine," said Jeffers.
Marsh shrugged into his captain's coat and snatched up his stick.
"Let's go then, Mr. Jeffers. It's too damn dark already."
The Fever Dream was steaming along briskly, her flags snapping and swirling in a strong wind, dark smoke pouring from her chimneys. Under the scant light of the strange purple sky, the waters of the Mississippi looked almost black. Marsh grimaced and strode forward briskly to Joshua York's cabin, Jeffers at his side. This time he did not hesitate at the door. He raised his stick and knocked. On the third knock he called out,
"Joshua, let me in. We gotta talk."
On the fifth knock, the door opened, moving slowly inward to reveal a soft, still blackness.
"Wait for me," Marsh said to Jeffers.
He stepped into the cabin and closed the door.
"Don't get mad now, Joshua," he said to the dark with a tight feeling in his gut. "I wouldn't bother you, but this is important and it's almost night anyhow."
There was no reply, though Marsh heard the sound of breathing.
"God damn it," he said. "Why do I always have to talk in the dark, Joshua? It makes me damned uncomfortable."
He frowned.
"Light a candle, will you?"
"No." The voice was curt, low, liquid, and it was not Joshua's. Abner Marsh took a step backward.
"Oh, Jesus, God, no," he said,
and there was a rustling sound even as his shaking hand found the door behind him and threw it open. He opened it wide, and by now his eyes had accustomed themselves to the darkness, and even the purplish glow of the storm-laden sky was enough to give brief form to the shadows within the captain's cabin. He saw Joshua York sprawled on his bed, pale and naked, his eyes closed, one arm hanging down to the floor, and on his wrist was something that looked like a terrible dark bruise or a crust of dried blood. And he saw Damon Julian moving toward him, swift as death, smiling.
"We killed you!"
Marsh roared, disbelieving, and he stumbled backward out of the cabin, tripped, and fell practically at Jonathan Jeffers' feet. Julian stopped in the doorway. A thin, dark line, hardly more than a cat scratch, ran down his cheek where Marsh had opened a yawning gash the night before. Otherwise he was unmarked. He had taken off his jacket and vest, and his ruffled silk shirt was without stain or blemish.
"Come in, Captain," Julian said quietly. "Don't run away. Come in and talk."
"You're dead. Might bash your goddamn head to pieces, Marsh said, choking on his own words.
He did not look at Julian's eyes. It was still day, he thought. He was safe outside, beyond Julian's reach, until the sun went down. So long as he did not look in those eyes, so long as he did not go back into that cabin.
Dead? Julian smiled. Ah, the other cabin. Poor Jean. He wanted so to believe Joshua, and see what you have done to him. Smashed his head in, did you see?
Abner Marsh climbed to his feet.
You changed cabins, he said hoarsely. You damned devil, you made him sleep in your bed. Joshua and I had so much to discuss, Julian replied.
He made a beckoning gesture.
Now come, Captain. I'm tired of waiting. Come and let us drink together. Burn in hell, Marsh said. Maybe we missed you this morning, but you ain't got away yet. Mr. Jeffers, run on down and get Harry Mike and his boys. A dozen of them ought to do, I reckon.
No, said Damon Julian. You won't do that.
Marsh waved his stick threateningly.
Oh, yes, I will. You gonna stop me?
Julian glanced up at the sky. A deep violet now shot through with black, a vast, bruised and overcast twilight.
Yes, he said, and he stepped out into the light.
Abner Marsh felt the cold, clammy hand of terror close around his heart. He raised his walking stick and said,
Stay away!
In a voice gone suddenly shrill. He stepped backward. Damon Julian smiled and came on. It wasn't light enough, Marsh thought with sick despair. And then there was a whisper of metal on wood, and Jonathan Jeffers stepped smoothly in front of him, his sword cane unsheathed, the sharp steel circling dangerously.
Go for help, Cap'n, Jeffers said quietly.
He pushed up his spectacles with his free hand.
I'll keep Mr. Julian occupied.
Lightly, with a fencer's practiced speed, Jeffers darted forward at Julian, slashing. His blade was a rapier, double-edged and wickedly pointed. Damon Julian reeled back barely in time, his smile fading from his lips as the clerk's slash passed inches in front of his face.
Step aside, Julian said darkly.
Jonathan Jeffers said nothing. He was in a fencer's stance, advancing slowly on the balls of his feet, crowding Julian back toward the door of the captain's cabin. He thrust suddenly, but Julian was too fast, sliding backward out of the reach of the sword.
Jeffers made an impatient tsk.
Damon Julian set one foot back inside the cabin and answered with a laugh that was almost a snarl. His white hands rose and opened. Jeffers thrust again. And Julian lunged, hands extended. Abner Marsh saw it all. Jeffers' thrust was true, and Julian made no effort to avoid it. The rapier entered him just above the groin. Julian's pale face twisted, and a grunt of pain escaped him, but he came on. Jeffers ran him clean through, even as Julian ran up the blade, and before the startled clerk had time to pull back, Julian had wrapped his hands around Jeffers' throat. Jeffers made a horrible choking sound, and his eyes bulged, and as he tried to wrench free, his gold-rimmed spectacles spun off and fell to the deck. Marsh leaped forward and smashed Julian with his stick, raining blows around his head and shoulders. Transfixed by the sword, Julian hardly seemed to feel it. He twisted savagely, and there was a noise like wood snapping. Jeffers went limp. Abner Marsh whipped his stick around in one final blow, with all his strength in it, and caught Damon Julian square in the center of his forehead, staggering him briefly. When Julian opened his hands, Jeffers fell like a rag doll. His head twisted around grotesquely, so it almost seemed it was on backwards. Abner Marsh retreated hurriedly. Julian touched his brow, as if gauging the effects of Marsh's blow. There was no blood, Marsh saw dismally. Strong as he was no Harry Mike Dunn, and Hickory was not iron. Damon Julian kicked loose Jeffers' death grip from the handle of the sword cane. Wincing, he drew the blood-slick blade awkwardly out of his own body. His shirt and trousers were damp and red, and stuck to him when he moved. He spun the blade off to one side, almost casually, and it whipped round and round like a top as it sailed off over the river, before vanishing into the dark moving water. Julian staggered forward again, leaving bloody footsteps behind him on the deck. But he came. Marsh retreated before him. There was no killing him, he thought, in a blind, sick panic. There is nothing to be done.
Joshua and his dreams, Hairy Mike and his iron billet, Mr. Jeffers and his sword, none of them could take the measure of this Damon Julian.
Marsh scrambled down the short stairway to the hurricane deck and began to run. Panting, he hurried after the companionway leading down from the hurricane deck to the promenade, where he'd find people and safety.
It was nearly dark, he saw. He took three thunderous steps downstairs, then gripped the handrail tightly and reeled, trying to check himself.
Sour Billy Tipton and four of them were climbing toward him.
Abner Marsh turned and ascended. Rush forward and ring the bell, he thought wildly. Ring the bell for help. But Julian had come down from the Texas deck now and cut him off. For a moment, Marsh stood dead with despair. He had no escape. He was trapped between Julian and the others, unarmed except for his useless goddamned stick, and it didn't matter. Nothing hurt them anyway. Fighting was useless. He might as well give in.
Julian wore a thin, cruel smile as he advanced. In his mind, Marsh saw that pale face descending on his own, teeth bared, those eyes bright with fever and thirst, red and ancient and invincible. If he'd had tears, Marsh might have wept. He found he could not move his legs from where they were rooted, and even his stick seemed far too heavy. Then, far up the river, another side-wheeler came round a bend, and Abner Marsh would never have noticed, but the pilot did, and the steam whistle of the fever dream called out to tell the other steamer that she'd take the larboard when they passed. The shrill wail of the great whistle stirred Marsh from his paralysis, and he looked up and saw the far-off lights of the descending boat and the fires belching from the tops of her tall chimneys, and the near black sky that loomed above it, and the lightning dim in the distance, lighting up the clouds from within, and the river black and endless, the river that was his home and his trade and his friend and his worst enemy and fickle, brutal, loving consort to his ladies. It flowed on like it always flowed, and it didn't know nothing nor care nothing about Damon Julian and all his kind. They were nothing to it. They would be gone and forgotten, and the old Devil River would still be rolling and cutting new channels and drowning towns and crops and raising up others and crushing steamboats in its teeth so it could spit out splinters. Abner Marsh moved to where the tops of the great paddle boxes loomed above the deck. Julian came, following him.
"Captain,"
he called, his voice twisted but still seductive. Marsh ignored it. He pulled himself up on top of the paddle box with a strength born of urgency, a strength he didn't know he had. Beneath his feet the great side wheel turned. He could feel it shaking through the wood, could hear the chunka-chunka. He moved aft, carefully, not wanting to fall in the wrong place, where the wheels would suck him under and smash him up. He looked down. The light was almost gone, and the water seemed black. But where the fever dream had gone, it was boiling and churning. The glow from the steamer's furnaces touched it with red, so it looked like boiling blood.
Abner Marsh stared down at it and froze.
"More blood," he thought. "More goddamn blood. Can't get away from it. Can't get away nohow."
The pounding of the steamer's stroke was thunder in his ears.
Sour Billy Tipton vaulted up on top of the paddle box and moved wearily toward him.
"Mr. Julian wants you, fat man," he said. "Come along now. You've gone as far as you can go."
He took out his little knife and smiled. Sour Billy Tipton had a truly frightening smile.
"It ain't blood," Marsh said loudly. "It's just a goddamn river."
Still clutching his stick, he took a deep breath and threw himself off the steamer.
Sour Billy's curses were ringing in his ears when he hit the water.